Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. And today we're going to have a fun day post-Halloween. Hopefully everybody listened to all of the warnings and didn't get your dog candy or take them out. You know, it's great to take your dogs out with you. And I'm, for one, definitely looking for other places, other businesses to allow dogs into public areas. Obviously, there are health codes and things like that. But the idea is we all love to take our dogs out. And the problem is that sometimes people take their dogs out and they lie about what the dog's purpose is. Now, we're going to talk a lot about service dogs in our second half, as we always do. But I wanted to talk to people about some things that I think are really newsworthy and noteworthy for right now. I think that the general dog population, which is roughly 47 to 49% of the population of the United States, actually has a pet dog or more than one. And so that's like half the people, which is actually more people than typically are voting in an election and causing new chief of staff and new POTUS, the POTUS, right, to be elected. So we really should start using the masses that we have. Most people with dogs do a pretty good job and try to take care of their dogs. But why is it that we don't have the ability to have places available where we can take our dogs out and enjoy them, where we can go for lunch with our dogs, where we can take our dog for dinner, where we can go for a picnic? Well, you know, one of the problems is that there's obviously health code violations, but there are places, and I am actually starting one that is pretty amazing. I'm going to be telling you more as time goes. But basically, I've got a place that I am creating that you would be able to actually bring your dogs with you and enjoy the things with your dogs that you can enjoy with your two-footed and two-legged human friends and family. So how do you get your dog to behave? Because let's face it, everybody would want to take the dog with them, right? I mean, almost everybody. Well, why can't people take their dogs out in public? Well, unfortunately, a lot of dogs are either dog aggressive or people aggressive or just plain rude. You know, those dogs that they're barking and they're out of control, and kind of like when you see somebody and they have two or three screaming kids in the supermarket or in the movie theater or in a restaurant and the parents don't seem to care. Well, I think sometimes the parents might be overwhelmed the same way as owners may be overwhelmed. Let's face it, it's not easy for somebody to take an animal out and have that animal react or have that animal do something terrible, like lunging at another person or dog, trying to bite someone, growling, snarling, barking, jumping all over. And I always think that, you know, much as, you know, when you see someone who is stuck in the on the highway in the middle lane or whatever, and everybody honks this person, like, get out of the road, you idiot. Well, do you think when that person woke up in the morning, that morning, that that person said, gee, you know, I think I'm going to have my car break down on the highway so I can have everybody on the entire freeway starting to, you know, yell at me and honk me and scream at me and everything else? You think that person really wanted that to happen? Well, of course not. Well, do you think the person who has the barking, growling, snarling, jumping, lunging, rude dog set out that morning to have a bad day and to make your day bad by having his dog or her dog, you know, kind of reactive? So, you know, I think that people need to, especially the dog lovers among us, just imagine that could be you. And guess what? You have a good dog now. 5 years from now, when you don't have your dog anymore and you might have a different dog, you might be that person. You might be the one getting the nasty looks and nasty comments. Get your dog under control. You know, just as I know somebody who was a, and she will tell you, she was a very snobby and maybe not so nice person. would tell people their children are so badly behaved and would, you know, tell them that you ought to be a better parent. You're a terrible parent. You shouldn't have children. And then she had a special needs child. And she said, and God got me back for every mean thing I ever said or did to anybody else with a special needs child. And I think the same thing happens, unfortunately, with people with dogs. When you have a dog who has behavioral issues, I mean, do you really think that that person wants the dog that they love so much to have behavioral issues? Is that what we think? Is that what the idea is? We want, like, all the dogs to just, you know, be rude and obnoxious? Or do we want our dogs to behave like we want our kids to behave, right? So maybe lend a little bit of a nice hand to somebody if someone is having a problem, instead of yelling at them and telling them they're terrible. Even if their dog did something bad, let's say their dog ran out of their house, right? And the dog ran out the gate or the door because the toddler let the dog out. Well, yes, it's the parent, people's fault. But really, if the dog were a friendly dog or a well-behaved dog that were trained by me or one of our people at UnitedCaninePros.com, you know what would happen? The dog would be out a little bit, or the dog, well, if we took care of the dog and taught it behaviorally, the dog would never have even gotten out of the door because the dog would know not to escape. But really, you're only as lucky as genetics and the luck of the draw, where, you know, you're actually going to have the opportunity to have a dog, you know, and especially if you get a dog, and especially if it's a rescue or you get it from a puppy mill place or one of these mixed breed designer disasters, which I don't hate. I just hate the people who breed them without any care of or concern about what they're creating. But, you know, those people are nice people, too. They're dog owners. They love dogs. And for you to be nasty and condescending and hurtful to them, guess what? God may get you back, and you may someday have that dog, or worse. And you may be the one with the lawsuit, or you may be the one with the rude, obnoxious dog. So let's all band together. Let's try to help each other instead of, you know, being mean to each other. Because you know what? The other half of the country either has no use for dogs or doesn't like dogs. So half the country and the half that we're in that loves dogs is listening right now, right? Got a million plus people hopefully listening at this very, very moment. So let's help each other. So what can we do? Well, when we go to a dog park, instead of taking your dog and just letting him run free when you don't know how he's going to be, see if maybe some of the other people in there might leash up their dogs and go out of the dog park and walk around the park first for a few minutes and let the dogs get to know each other. Because this way, the dogs are going to be able to meet each other without the craziness of 30 or 40 or 50 other dogs. Now, anybody who's ever heard me talk one time knows I hate dog parks. Why do I hate dog parks? Well, first of all, the diseases and germs. You don't know who was there. You don't know what animal urinated or defecated or had canine flu or parvo or anything else. You're exposing your dogs to terrible things. So take a walk on the street. It's a lot less likely that you're going to have a problem with a dog that you meet on the street than at the dog park. So that's cleanliness-wise. Well, the second thing is it's crazy energy. And how many people bring dog bones or balls or some kind of chuckets or all these different things? How many people do that? And now if you have a dog who gets a little territorial or possessive over things, very, very possible that that dog might become possessive also over whatever it is that's inside the dog park. So yeah, you know, you got to be kind of careful of that. And then of course, just having the frenetic energy of all those dogs and all those owners who maybe have their dogs well-behaved, maybe their dogs are not well-behaved. And you just really never know what's going to be there. Like Forrest Gump's mother said, life is like a box of chocolates. You just never know what you're going to get. And when you go to a dog park, You have no idea what you're going to get. So go out if you can. Ask some of the owners of the dogs there if, hey, guys, maybe we can meet up next time and let's go for a little short walk for a few minutes, 5-10 minutes, and let's get the human some exercise too. And then we'll let our dogs in the dog park. Now they know each other. Now there's a lot less likelihood of these dogs getting into trouble or getting aggressive or getting protective or territorial. So there's a way to do it. You don't have to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, and say, well, geez, I've been at the dog park 50 times, and 10 of those times my dog's gotten attacked. Why don't you change what you're doing? Learn what you need to do. Learn how to change things. The whole key is for you to try to, you know, get the dog into a situation where it's a positive thing for him instead of, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. So let's go back to what I started with at the top of the hour, which is let's try to figure out how we can lobby or how we can even, some of us, open up different facilities around the country where dogs can go in to different places. So what happens with that? Well, the first thing that can happen, right, of course, is somebody buys a place and says, hey, we're going to let dogs in. Now, I've got a place, a new, it's going to be huge, about 75,000 square feet. I'm not telling anybody about the details yet, but we should be open somewhere in March. And it's great because people get to bring their dogs. There are these cool rooms, that big rooms, like huge, like 4,000 or 5,000 square feet each room, where you can go and you can walk inside but feel like you're outside through different areas. And you'll see things you can't even imagine. And guess what? You can also, which is a lot of fun, you can also take your dog and have food with your dog, you know, have a little snack with your dog, do all kinds of things, and spend the day with your dog and let your dog get pampered a little bit too. I'll tell you a lot more about that as we get closer. But yes, you can eat lunch with your dog. Yes, you can go hang out with your dog. You can take a nap with your dog. You can walk your dog all over, in and out of different places, and you will have literally the best time with your dog. But it'll be safe and it'll be easy because you won't have to be, thinking about, you know, oh my gosh, I got to get a fake emotional support thing, or I got to get a fake service dog thing to bring my dog because I want to take my dog somewhere. So there's two parts to that. And again, there are a lot of people who can benefit from having a service dog or from their own dog being in public with them. You know, people have anxiety and people have, you know, different conditions that would definitely be helped by having a dog. But your dog's got to be well-behaved, even if it's an emotional support animal, right? You can't have a dog ripping a man's face off on a Delta flight. You can't have, you know, airlines that are now forced to boycott and ban or, you know, prevent you from bringing certain breeds on planes. They never did, but guess what? You have it happen a few times, and we all know the breeds that always are discriminated against. But sometimes, you know, unfortunately, there is a very legitimate reason. So why don't we all together, let's get together, and actually a great way to do it is get on Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST, WyattsList.com, and start learning how to take care of your dog. Start learning that, hey, when you go in public with your dog, you groom it beforehand. You don't have a German Shepherd that's got hairballs flying off of it in the airport. You know, be courteous to people. We have lost our manners, and we are no longer courteous to each other, with or without a dog. People don't pick up after their dog, so that there's dog feces all over. Guess what? When you do that, it shows how low class you are. It doesn't speak of all dog owners, but it speaks of you. But guess what? Everyone gets judged on you. So if you're an obnoxious dog owner who fakes you know, fakes of being having a service dog, and your dog is filthy and your dog is ill-behaved, and now somebody comes in with a child with autism with one of our perfectly behaved dogs who's super trained, and you don't even know the dog is there. And now our person, our mom or dad who has one of our dogs for his special needs child has to give an explanation. Well, why don't you have ID? The last person who came in with a service dog had ID. Well, guess what? That one was the ill-behaved one that was a mess and a disaster. Guess what? That one was not real. Mine is. You don't notice that my dog is even there. So why do you guys, instead of trying to put one over on, you know, everybody and trying to hurt all the people in the world who love dogs, why don't we change that up a little bit? Why don't we say, guess what? Let's all try really hard to teach our dogs to be well-behaved. And guess what? Let's be courteous to each other. When we are getting on an airplane and our dog, you know, has to use the bathroom, you know, clean it up. You know, make sure, and even little simple things like, guess what? If your dog has an accident, there's a good chance that you didn't prepare the dog for that. You make sure that the dog goes to the bathroom. You make sure you don't give him a big meal or sometimes even any meal before he gets on the plane, because if you're on for a 10-hour flight, I got news for you. That dog is going to have to go to the bathroom before 10 hours, and if you're not going to help your dog, make sure that that dog actually you know, has a, you know, a good, you know, a good background and is going to know how to go to the bathroom, which, by the way, all of our service dogs through MerlinKids.org, all of our service dogs, and even all my dogs, my show dogs as well, all of our dogs potty on command. So we'll tell them, go take a break is what we use. It's the police way of saying is take a break. And take a break means go take a break, go to the bathroom, and go do what you have to do, because you're not going to be able to go for a while. So why not do that for everybody? Why not have, you know, where you tell the dog to go to the bathroom and the dog learns to go to the bathroom before you get on the plane? Then you don't have the potty accident, okay? So, you know, I think just so much of this is that people don't know. I think most people want to be good. Most people want to not have a dog who's reactive or obnoxious, right? But you don't know what to do, so you get defensive and you start arguing and yelling at people and demeaning people and saying nasty things. And it's just because you know that your dog isn't going to pass those tests. I actually had somebody several years ago, very nice young lady, and she was adamant that she did not want any kind of legislation regarding service dogs. She did not want any kind of testing or identification. And she had a dog she used as her service dog, she said. So she was just so adamant. And I kept saying to her, and I said, again, can you just tell me why would you not want to have some kind of a national ID on your dog, whether it's a service dog, an emotional support dog, or just a pet? Why wouldn't you want to prove that you've passed a test that shows that your dog is well-behaved and can handle, you know, crowds or being out in public? And she said, well, I don't like that idea. It's nobody's business how my dog behaves. And I said, oh, yeah, it is, because when your dog bites my dog, or when your dog bites a person or is out of control, and now my dog is judged on your dog, it does affect me, and it is my business. And she said, well, my dog could never pass one of those tests. That's why I don't want identification. That's why I don't want testing. And there you go. And how many people do you know who are trying to fake service dogs or trying to fake emotional support dogs? And the reason they're so adamant is they know their dog would never pass those tests. Well, I'm telling you right now, Merlin's Kids and United Canine Professionals, Merlin's Kids, we do that. We train dogs. We'll train you and your dog. And your dog will learn. Now, not every dog can do it. There's probably 1 in 10 can be a therapy dog. About 1 in 100 can be an actual service dog. And that's assuming you have a very good trainer, either an individual, non-professional, or a very, very good professional trainer
And again, I would say 1 in 100 can actually train to be a service dog of these local obedience trainers and all. You really need someone who specializes, not somebody who's trained one dog, but somebody who's trained hundreds and hundreds of actual service dogs. And the reason we want that is we want to make sure that not only is the person capable of teaching your dog what it needs to know, but also that the dog isn't going to be ruined because that person doesn't really know how to do that, different skills. There are so many different things. Like with Merlin's kid, if you called us and said, hey, I want to train service dogs, it will take you 5 years minimum to be certified by us to be able to do 2 or 3 different things. Let's say autism and PTSD and maybe mobility. It takes years to learn how to do that. Because guess what? Yeah, you can go out there and you can say, oh, good, look, I trained a dog to be a mobility dog. Okay, good. For one person. Guess what? There are no two people with the same disability. There are no two dogs who learn the same. You can take a dog who's a very confident dog or a dog who's too confident to the point of being dominant. You can take a dog who's fearful. You can take a dog who's a combination of that. And all of those dogs will learn completely differently. And in those situations where the dog might be afraid or might react, and if you as the trainer do not know exactly what to do with that individual dog in that individual moment, you can ruin the dog. And then, you know what? Now you've ruined somebody's chance at having their service dog or their emotional support dog. So it really, really is important. Don't, you know, even for the people with the trainer who call themselves trainers, if you're a trainer and you are really a service dog trainer, then you are going to know how to train any dog to do that one skill, that one particular type of service work. And if you don't know, and if you're not intimately involved and knowledgeable about that disability, you can't train a service dog. If you don't know the way someone falls or you don't know how somebody gets up, how can you train a dog to lift them up or keep them from falling? You have to understand the disability which you want to train for, or you can never, ever do a good job, in my humble opinion, okay? Now, you might be able to say, oh, yeah, well, I trained this dog, you know, and this dog and this dog. Well, that's great. Now, let's see what they're like in 5 years. Let's see if you trained the humans, too, or did you just train the dog to sit or lie down? And that's the point. The point is you have to be able to teach the dog or train the dog in many different ways to be able to do many different things and for each disability. So let's say if we're just talking about for a minute, now we're just talking about instead of, you know, training dogs to be service dogs, let's talk about just training dogs in general to be in public. You don't just take a dog who's a fearful dog and take him out in public and yell at him or give him a cookie every time he reacts. You have to do a lot of work before you get him out. You have to work on your relationship. You have to work on the trust issues. Your dog has to trust you first before he's going to trust anything else. He has to be able to trust that when you tell him in a way that it's okay to do whatever it is, or it's okay to go into a particular place. If he doesn't have confidence in you, you will never be able to train him to be a service dog. The whole problem is that people don't put the time in to be able to learn how to train different types of dogs to do the same skills, and then how to train the same dogs to do different skills. So you really do have to teach in a lot of different ways. You really have to teach all of these different, you know, these different tasks. And it's not always easy. It really isn't. But together, hopefully we can make things happen. We'll be able to, you know, get out there and have, you know, dogs like service dogs and emotional support dogs, and all the dogs will be well behaved. I mean, who would really complain about a dog being anywhere, obviously except in a sterile environment or where food's being prepared, but who really would be upset about that, right? You really wouldn't be upset about that, except that you don't want dogs who are ill-behaved running around, jumping on people, and generally being, horribly turned out, as they say. In other words, the animal might be dirty, the animal might be obnoxious, it might be out of control. Well, really, we have to just first look at, trying to be nice to each other, kind to each other. That's like a good start. And of course, we also have to make sure that, we're being honest with ourselves and with each other. That, hey, this is not a service dog, but, I would like to bring the dog in. And, like we're going into the bank is a perfect example. A lot of banks, you can go in, they'll even give you a dog cookie. And, people will bring their dogs into the bank, even though maybe the bank isn't supposed to allow them. But if the dog is well-behaved and calm, who's going to say no, right? The problem is because you go in with your ill-behaved dog who's jumping or barking or who's, running from one side of the leash to the other and is trying to jump on client, customers and, knocking old ladies down. We've all seen this stuff. And, the issue is let's get your dogs to be well-behaved. Now, an easy way to do that and to at least start on the right path is to read a good book on canine behavior. I will volunteer mine. It is a true behavior book. It is not obedience at all. Not that obedience is bad, but obedience doesn't change behavior, right? Obedience isn't, going to make an aggressive dog not aggressive. Shock collars, people will use shock collars. Guess what? I hate those things. Now, sometimes people can use like a remote collar for hunting or different things like that, because those are situations. There are some situations where that can be kind of a helpful thing. But for the most part, those aren't good because the dog doesn't know where the correction is coming from. And if the dog doesn't know where the correction is coming from, then he doesn't trust. And that goes back to what we're going to talk about in the second half today for from the shelter dog to service dog section, which will be with you in a few minutes. We're just going to take a quick break and stay tuned and bring a notepad because you're going to want to take notes on some things when we come back. Welcome back, and we are on our From Shelter Dog to Service Dog segment, and we were on a bit of a tirade, which I'm known to do, because I am, as I have been told, passionate, knowledgeable, and effective. That's what Merlin's Kids is about, and United Canine Pros is about. We're about helping you guys to be better owners, to have better dogs that are better behaved so that we can all take our dogs all over the place. And that's really what everybody should be working toward. We shouldn't be fighting each other. We shouldn't be arguing with each other. We should be helping each other and being partners instead of being adversaries. Why not be an advocate for dogs instead of being an adversary because you don't like a particular person? Or because you don't like the way somebody acted, let's just kind of join together on this. Now, let's get to service dogs. I told you guys to all bring a pen, and you're going to want to write stuff down here, or if you want to take notes on your phone or tablet or whatever. But I want to give you some things I want you to work on. They're also in my book, which is called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. And you can get that on Amazon. It's a Kindle book. You can read it, and it takes all of about 2 hours to read. But what's great about that book is we're going to be going through every week, almost as if you're in one of my classes where I'm teaching you how to become a behaviorist or how to be a service dog trainer. And it's very cool. So we're going to go through things today, a little bit of an introduction. And if everybody can get my book, and then every week I'm going to give you a mini course on a different aspect of why that is so important and why we need to do this for our dogs. Well, let's say when we're training a service dog, because that's really the end all be all. And we've all seen people say, oh, yeah, I train service dogs, right? Well, most people are raising a puppy for a program. But it's a very, very difficult thing. I can't emphasize how hard it is because we don't use obedience, okay? Obedience is fine. I have a lot of really good friends who are tops in their field with obedience. People who are national obedience champions, like literally AKC national obedience champions, people who train dogs for the movies and TV and Broadway. I mean, the people I travel among are the best of the best. Do you know what's great about them? They will refer their behavioral clients to me. So when they have a dog that they go, oh, my gosh, I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be doing with this dog, and I don't know what to do, they refer the dog to me. And guess what I do? I fix the dog for them because I work with the humans, and then I give the dog back to the person who referred the dog to me. So now, whether it's the local Petco, which actually refers a lot of people to me, then I can give that person, that company, that dog, but now the dog is well behaved. So we've kind of worked together. So now the obedience trainer couldn't help that dog, right? I did help the dog. Cool, great. And then guess what happens? Now I give the dog back so they get that patient or that client back. But they weren't going to have that client in the first place because that dog couldn't behave in and around other dogs. So who did we help? We helped the dog. We help the owner. It shouldn't be about, oh, that person's no good unless that person is being abusive or using things improperly and is getting very, overly aggressive with the dog. Because there's no reason. It's like if you have a child and the child, is hitting other kids and then you beat your kid. Well, you're just teaching them that beating was the right choice. You have to teach, not trained. The same way you teach children, we need to teach dogs. So the first thing that we have to look at is a relationship. There has to be a relationship, not just between you and your dog, but between all the members and among all the members of your family. You've got to be on the same page. I cannot emphasize this enough. I walk into families who are just everybody's doing something different because everybody wants to be the expert. And I say to them, listen, I am the best quarterback ever on the face of this earth. Not really, but I'm the best quarterback. I'm the Joe Namath of dog behavior. So I get that ball and I'm going to throw that ball and I can spiral it perfectly just where it's supposed to go, exactly as prepared and as I'm supposed to do. But you know what? If my offensive line isn't protecting me, I get sacked. Guess what? We don't win. If my wide receiver decides he's having a fight with his wife and doesn't want to catch the ball, guess what? We don't win. If the tight end isn't where he's supposed to be and the ball isn't there, or if there's something isn't happening that's supposed to happen, or if they're not being blocked, then guess what? We don't win. We can only win if I'm the best quarterback and you're the best tight end and he's the best defensive guy and he's the best offensive guy. And if everybody does his or her job and we all are on the same page, this is the number one problem when you're training a dog or you're working in your family trying to do something
for another living being. And we all love the dog. It's not that we don't love the dog. We all love the dog. So we sneak him a piece of food he's not supposed to have. And now the dog starts begging from the table. Or we let the dog up on the couch like the little kids always do. Oh, I want to let him up here. Nobody will know. And we let him up on the couch when the dog isn't allowed. And now dad comes home. The dog goes up on the couch and gets hair all over the couch. And now dad's mad because the dog got the hair all over. And they're mad. He's mad at the dog. Let's get rid of this damn dog. It doesn't listen. But who's teaching him that? Right? You're teaching. Your family is teaching him the wrong way. And who are we setting up for failure here? We're setting the dog up for failure because we're not giving him any kind of clarity. We're not teaching him, or we're teaching him wrong. And that's the problem. The number one problem and the number one behavioral issue, you know what it's caused by? And it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's aggression or whether it's dominance or whether it's fear. It's caused by the uncertainty that that dog has in where he's supposed to be, what he's supposed to do. And it's a terrible feeling. Look at children who, they come home, they don't know if the parent is going to be home, if the parent is going to beat them, or if the parent is going to hug them. That's not a way for a child to live, and it's certainly also not a way for an animal to live. So you have to think like a dog. You have to start thinking, what is the dog perceiving? What is that dog looking for? What is he looking at? What does the dog think is going on? Does he understand that, you know, we really don't want him on the furniture? Or is he thinking, well, I must be allowed on the furniture because sometimes I'm allowed on the furniture. Well, sometimes I am allowed on the furniture. Sometimes I'm not allowed on the furniture. That is not something that's going to be very easy for a dog to be able to understand. So now what happens? Well, the dog doesn't know what to do, and he maybe gets up on the furniture with dad, or he maybe eats food off of someone's plate, because guess what? When no one's looking, you put the plate on the floor. So now people plates become the dog's plates. It's not the dog's fault, right? It's not the dog's fault. It's the people's fault, because the people, the owners, aren't giving that dog clear and consistent rules to follow. And that's one of the things we're going to go through in depth when we start doing these every week, when we do a little bit about each one each week. You have to really be able to keep it consistent, keep it thoughtful, and keep it according to what makes sense for, you know, for your situation with your dog. You've got to make sure that your dog understands what you want him to do and also understands what he's supposed to do. So the goal is to make the dog, a service dog or a pet, an independent thinker. If he's an independent thinker, then he knows what's okay and what's not okay. All of our service dogs, the Merlin's Kids dogs, we are very, very careful to make them independent thinkers. Now, to me, a service dog cannot be a dog who is obedience trained. Now, that doesn't mean you can't use obedience for some things to make a dog well-behaved in general, where the dog is compliant. But if you have a dog who, let's say, is a mobility dog, you can train him to stay in a certain place. But how do you teach him that when you start falling over, when he's across on the other side of the room, that you what you want him to do? And maybe the answer is you can't. So what do you need to do? You need to have the clarity, that's my word, clarity, that the dog understands that he has a job. Not that he's going to get a cookie for it, not that he's going to get zapped if he doesn't do it right. But it has to be an overarching concept that the dog understands, I'm here to take care of this human. If this human starts to fall over, it's my job to make sure that he or she is safe. It's not my job
to jump up on people. It's not my job to go eat food off of a, off of the floor or off of a plate. It's not my job to beg. It's my job and only my job to take care of, this particular human being. And that's your key. Your key is understanding and clarity so that the dog can understand what you want of him, what you're asking of him, what he is allowed to do, and what he is not allowed to do. But when everybody in the household is giving a different bit of information, and especially, how you think like, oh, nobody's going to know. Oh, I'll just do it when nobody's around because then I'll sneak him food when nobody's around. Well, try that. Anybody with a gluten sensitivity or celiac, go ahead and sneak your gluten, sneak your wheat products when nobody's around, because you won't get sick if you eat them then, because nobody knows that you're eating it. Are you kidding? That person will get so sick. And that is your problem. Your problem is, first of all, that it does matter. Second of all, there is no such thing as sneaking it. And third of all, why do you want to set your dog up for failure? That's ridiculous. You love this dog and you want to set it up to fail? Does this make any sense? Well, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. The key for you guys is consistency, not just you, but consistency with others. Sit down with your family. Sit down with the kids. And the kids are usually not the problem. Sit down with mom and dad and say, guess what? When you decide that you're going to, sneak the dog food, he gets allergies, or some dogs are allergic to wheat and can get severe behavioral issues because of certain foods. And we'll go through that 1 week as well. It's not that you're putting one over on someone. It's that you're hurting your dog. That's who you're hurting. And that's probably the last one you do want to hurt. I've seen brothers and sisters, brothers and brothers, where, the kids will be hanging out and they say, I'm going to get back at my brother. I'm going to do this. So they'll teach the dog to do something bad. Well, guess what? You know what happens? Dad comes home or mom comes home and the dog does something it's not supposed to. And again, who gets blamed? Because remember, you're doing it. Nobody's going to know. It's a secret. You know what? If you love your dog, you got to deal with the humans in order to change the dog's behavior. And I have a phrase I should trademark. I say, if I can't change the humans, I can't change the dog. If I cannot change the humans, how can I begin to change the dog? The answer is, I can't. I have to be able to train the humans, change the humans, so that the humans are doing the right thing all the time, consistently, and that they are, doing the right thing, not because somebody's watching, but because it's the right thing. And this is something we've all seen, John Quinones, I love this, what would you do? And you see people doing things, like people go into a vet's office and they open the drawers and they start stealing needles or gauze or something. Like, why are you doing that? Like, you can afford that, right? But you're doing it. Why are you doing it? You're doing that for one reason. You think you can get away with it. And if you think you can get away with it, and that's why you're doing it, then that's a big problem, because you shouldn't be doing something that isn't right because you don't think you're going to get caught. And it's the same thing with dogs. If you do something that's going to cause the dog to have problems and not understand or not be able to, to behave properly. And that's why you do it. And you say, like, oh, nobody's going to know. You're right. Nobody's going to know. And your dog's going to get in trouble. And you're going to wind up ruining your dog. So relationship between you and the dog is going to be so important. The dog has to be able to have that consistency so that he or she feels comfortable and confident in you. In you, not in itself, but in you. Because it's kind of like having a little kid
and the little kid's parents are, let's say, Arnold Schwarzenegger and who's a big girl? Ronda Rousey. Okay, those are your parents. So you know you're safe. You know nobody's going to mess with you, right? You feel safe. So you can go anywhere, do anything, be anywhere, whatever it is, and you know you're safe. And that feeling of feeling physically and emotionally safe is critical. But there's another thing that goes with that. You need to know what's okay and what's not okay, and you need to have that consistency. The reason you need that consistency is if you don't have it, then you become uncertain. And very often, people or animals who are uncertain can become fearful, can become dominant, over-dominant, or even aggressive, or fear-aggressive, because they're not sure what they're supposed to do. And I have an example I say, and I think it's pretty funny, but it really does make sense. If you have, let's say, a dog who, you know, who's one day he's great and one day he's not, and he just never knows what to do, who's hurting that, like, when you do something, who's hurting? The animal's hurting, right? It's the same thing if you're not being consistent. If, let's say, your significant other took up the sport of lawn darts, but instead of throwing them at the lawn, that person is throwing them toward the door, not at the door, like the one group of crazy trainers who throw things at dogs and say, no, we're throwing it toward the dog. Well, if you have good aim, you're throwing it toward the dog. If you have bad aim, you're throwing it at the dog. Either way, what I'm going to explain to you is going to make sense to you. Imagine that, oh, let's say once a week, but you never know what time or what day, once a week, your significant other is going to hurl a big lawn dart right at the front door at a dartboard. And the dartboard, of course, is part of the door, right? Because the door now is getting jammed up, and as the significant other is throwing these lawn darts, they're not always going to be landing in the dartboard. Sometimes they're going to be landing in the door or in the door frame, high, low, wherever. And hopefully not, they won't be landing on you or in you. So let's say you have this lawn dart, and once a week, the lawn dart comes flying through the door or at the door, and you duck because you know there's lawn dart coming. Or you open the door, and then you make sure that, like, the lawn dart isn't coming, and then you come in. So let's say your significant other does this for, 3 months. Yeah, roughly 12, 13 times that this lawn dart has come flying out of all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times you've come in the front door. So now your significant other stops the new hobby of lawn darts, and what do? So now you come in the door because you're getting very used to having the significant other throwing the lawn dart here and there. Don't you still duck? Don't you still kind of expect that lawn dart to come flying at the door? Well, even though you know it's not, you have PTSD now. You have a repetitive situation, something that's happened, or what we call patterned behavior, that you now associate coming in the front door with having somebody chucking a lawn dart at you. And guess what that means? If you're a dog, and every so often when you go, let's say, to the dog park, or you go wherever it is you go, something bad happens. Not that it happens every time, but those times that it happens create that patterned behavior and that patterned memory. And now that memory becomes, well, a little bit dangerous, because now the dog becomes proactive at maybe being a little aggressive with other animals, because it says, oh, I'm going to get you before you get me. And where did it start? Because somebody started throwing lawn darts at the front door. So don't start throwing lawn darts at your dog. Don't let your dog be constantly guessing what's going to happen. What's okay today? What's not okay today? Am I going to get in trouble for this? Or am I going to get a cookie for it? And that's where you don't want to use rewards like food or a lot of praise when your dog is fearful, because the dog is afraid and you're petting him and giving him cookies and
saying it's okay. It's okay to be aggressive. It's okay to, you know, be, you know, out of control. It's okay to lunge at another dog. No, it's not okay. So don't tell him it's okay, because that is also breaking down the relationship, because now he knows it's okay to be afraid, or it's okay to be, you know, aggressive. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, I have to tell him that, you know, it's okay that he doesn't have to worry about that dog or that person because I've already checked it out. It's okay. That person is okay. Well, guess what? Dogs don't speak English or Spanish or Portuguese or whatever language it is. Dogs speak, I call it doggonese. Doggonese. They speak dog language. They don't speak people language. So your dog doesn't hear it's okay. It's only the neighbor, and the neighbor's a nice guy, and he just works late, and he looks a little odd and has a limp. The dog hears woof, 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 like Charlie Brown's mother used to say, wah, 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 Fluffy. Wah, 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 Fluffy. That dog doesn't understand what you're saying. So when you tell him it's okay, which is a common thing dogs figure out, it means it's okay. Oh, you're a good boy. Good boy, good boy. That means that the dog is now associating your phrases or your words and your energy with the fact that, oh, it's okay to do the thing that you're doing. And as far as I know, it's not okay to do that. And that's where the problem is. You have to be able to separate yourself and separate the dog so that the dog knows that it's not okay. But don't tell him it's okay, because he's going to stop trusting you. And the thing that you have to keep, among all other things, is keeping the relationship with your dog, where the dog trusts you. And I'm not saying the dog isn't going to trust you. We'll go into this a lot more later. But the dog has to be able to trust that when you say something or you allow something, that it's really going to be okay every single time. And that's like little kids, you know, if you say, well, you know, today you ask for something, or you're, you know, you start crying and I give you what you wanted. Tomorrow I don't give you what you wanted. The next day you cry and I don't do anything. The kid doesn't know, well, what if I cry or I don't cry? So I'll try crying. Let me try that. And then if that doesn't work, I'll try laughing. And if that doesn't work, I'll try looking cute. I mean, that's the whole point, is that each dog has to have that consistency to understand what's expected of him, and that it's the same thing from the same time every time, the same people. So that's how dogs, and that's how we train our service dogs, that they know that there's that clarity and that understanding. They trust us. They know what's expected of them. They know what their jobs are. And they know what's going to happen. And that's what I want you guys. I know you probably wrote down a lot. I want you to get my book, Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. I can get it on Amazon. You can download the free Kindle software. I want you to go on Wyatt's List, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com. Sign up and join, because there's some amazing things that you get for a very low membership fee. And there's also a free part of the app as well. And then, of course, you know, merlinskids.org, if you want to either donate, or if you need help, if you want to donate money, or if you want to donate a dog, a good dog that's not one of the breeds that we can't use. If you need a dog for yourself, or if you need training for yourself for a service dog. And then, of course, UnitedCaninePros.com, which is our behavioral certification company. If you want to learn how to train service dogs, you're going to go through Merlin's Kids. If you want to be certified in natural canine behavior rehabilitation, we're happy to teach you. And you can check us out. It's also 855-449-9288 or 1-855-HI-WYATT. So I hope everyone has a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Try to join together to help each other so that we can have dogs in more places, better behaved dogs,
in places that they're going to be a joy to be around. Well, I got to go. It's time, and I look forward to seeing you all next week. Make sure you tune in next Friday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Have a great weekend.